Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. The team with the longest active winning streak in the Eastern Conference is on NBC Sports Chicago tonight. That's right. Your Chicago Bulls take their four-game winning streak into Milwaukee and face the Greek Freak and the Bucks. Pre-game live with Ski, Kendall, and Will. Tip off our coverage at 6:30. Heel Funk, Stacey King have the hometown call at 7 straight up. Winter meetings over. Hot stove continuing to burn. Baseball world waits for the Orioles to make up their mind. Will they actually deal Manny Machado? Or was this just another crazy trade rumor that got Sox fans all worked up? And it's the rematch for the Bears against the Lions. Last time they met, Mitchell Trubisky drove them down the field late, only for Connor Bart to miss the game-tying field goal as badly as if I was trying it. So what happens this time? And how important is it for Trubisky to keep winning heading into the offseason? Man, welcome into Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. I'm David Kaplan. Hope you're ready for a great weekend. Let's meet the panel for today's show. We call him the Blackhawks Insider for WGN Radio. He is Scott King. From Bleacher Report, the Big Ten Unfiltered podcast, he is Seth Gruen. And from 670 The Score, getting ready to go up to Detroit tomorrow to cover the beloved Bears, he is Chris Emma. All right, we're going to start with baseball today because Manny Machado watch continues. Reportedly, the White Sox have put a very substantial offer that does not include Michael Kopech on the table. The Cardinals and many others also involved. So, Chris Emma, I'm going to start with you. You cannot have a 72-hour negotiating window, but you're getting a great player with 1 year left. How deep would you go in terms of putting a package together to try and get this guy on the south side?
Not too deep when they've gone this far in the White Sox to build this farm system, to add these young prospects and so many promising pieces for the future. For the 1 year that you would have him, of course, plus you're not, I just don't trust that you're going to get that long-term deal worked out. I don't care what kind of handshakes you get settled right now. It's still a tough bargaining process and something that I just don't quite trust. Are they going to find a match, too? I mean, Michael Kopech's not available. Eloy Jimenez is definitely not available. Who are they going to give up to try to get this guy? I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, unless they have some sort of guarantee through back channels that he is going to sign a long-term deal, makes absolutely no sense to me. I mean, you're mortgaging your future for 1 year with this guy in a division that you're probably not going to win anyways next year. Makes no sense to me.
I agree, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but reportedly the White Sox are making the biggest push for him, and you have every team is after him, and Machado and his agent pretty much made it clear that he's going to play somewhere 1 year and then test the free agent market. So are they hoping, are they having talks where they're going to make him happy in Chicago and he's going to stick around and be able to re-sign him or extend him? I'm not sure, but it does make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, Dan Lozano is a very well-respected agent, and that's who represents Manny Machado. If you looked at him coming over here, and you said, all right, this is our only way we can get him, because if he hits free agency, Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox, whoever else, and you feel like, look, we're the White Sox. No disrespect is intended here, but we are not at their level yet of those other teams. The only way we can get him is to impress upon him how great it is to play here in this city. Would you take a risk?
No, it's too big a risk. It's too big a risk because you're at the whim of his agent and the player, and also going into free agency with the potential that, right, you can't pay as much as those teams. Doesn't make sense from my perspective as far as the White Sox are concerned.
You can pay as much as those teams. Sox have no commitments going forward after this year. The White Sox could, if they want, blow everyone out of the water.
But their history doesn't dictate that. Their
Correct,
history doesn't dictate that's going to happen. So,
but they've got so much salary cap relief or salary luxury tax relief that they could say, you know what, we can have a $30 million a year player. Let's
do it. Have so many prospects to wheel and deal for the right deal too. It just doesn't make sense because they're clearly in the middle of a rebuild and they have so many young guys that you're trying to. You could use a guy, a good player like a Machado, who's 105 home runs in the last three seasons. You could use a guy like that, obviously, or a good veteran player, but you have to be able to build around them. You have to be able to keep them for a long time. It's not going to happen.
Even if the price is cheap, I don't understand the move, because why do you want him for just 1 year? And next year, again, when you're not going to win the division and you're trying to, in theory, lose as many games as you can, so you're picking higher. I don't get it. I almost want this to happen so that I can get an explanation as to why. Because I don't understand. I'm baffled.
Machado would be an excellent fit for this rebuild. He fits with that age. He's only 25 years old. Two-time Gold Glover, three-time All-Star. What you said, over 100 home runs over the last three seasons. Terrific player. But you're doing him a disservice if you're his agent and saying, okay, you're going to go here and you're going to stay there. You got to let him hit the open market and be there for the Dodgers or for the Yankees and everybody else.
What if the White Sox made the deal? They didn't give up Kopech. They didn't give up Jimenez. Gave up a nice package of players.
That'd be great.
They got him.
It just wouldn't happen.
And then they walked up to him and said, here you go, big guy. There's $300 million over 10 years.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
You're telling me a guy walks away from $300 million.
I think that'd be a perfect situation. I just don't know if that's possible.
And why does he need to play here next year for them to do that? If he's going to hit the open market anyways.
Yeah.
I don't think playing in a certain city is all that impressive. I don't think you need that to wow someone in free agency. The history of free agency has never dictated such. When a guy hits the open market, you go, you make
because
presentations. People lined up at Randy Johnson's house. There were literally limos lined up in front of Randy Johnson's house. George Steinbrenner, every agent in baseball making their pitch. It wasn't like the year before people were trying to acquire him.
But I believe that if the Yankees walk up and go, hey, there's $300 million, big guy, and the Red Sox do it, and the Dodgers do it, that the White Sox are playing from behind in that scenario because of where they've been. They have not been very good for several years. Those are the crown jewels of the game.
But isn't there a chance that him and his agent like the direction the Sox are headed with all the young prospects?
That's why
you bring
him in here and you really let him know how the direction is, how great it is to play there.
But you don't need to play here to see that. That's all happening in Charlotte and in Double A and in Single A and at the lower levels. That's not happening at the major league level. I don't get what he's coming here to see. The Sears Tower? I don't understand.
Some churros.
Life as a White Sox player. All right, let's move on from the White Sox to the Chicago Cubs, who are still searching for another starting pitcher. Price on Alex Cobb had been thought to be $52 million over four. Now it sounds like it could be approaching $80 million over four. Look, you have got to put a price on a guy, and that's what Theo has always said. And if that price gets to be too expensive, you cannot pay it if you don't think the player's worth it. There's no way I'm giving Alex Cobb $80 million.
I trust Theo Epstein to evaluate the pitching. If they really believe that firmly in what Jim Hickey brings to the table, what their structure could do for Alex Cobb, I think it's worth it. I'd say go for it, add another good piece to your rotation, because we saw what happened with the limitations last year where you get to the back end of the rotation and you're looking for answers. I like the Tyler Chatwood acquisition a lot. I think that's going to be an excellent fit. I think Alex Cobb would fit just as well. You got a really strong 4-5, not for just 2018, but for years to come there.
I like Cobb a lot. You know, he's got a great fastball, even better curveball. You only need him to be about the third or fourth best guy in the rotation. So maybe putting up $80 million for that, maybe there's a little more risk there. Maybe you're overpaying a little bit, but he'd definitely be a good fit with the Cubs.
But you do have to pay market. So I understand that Theo Epstein said that, but that's in the context of understanding probably that pitching is the most overvalued commodity in sports. It really is. I mean, we're in the era right now of the $150 million number three starter. I think we crossed that $100 million threshold 3-4 years ago, and we're entering really expensive territory. You know, number one starters routinely get over $200 million. So pitching's really, really, really expensive.
So if I told you could spend $80 to $90 million on Alex Cobb, or you could trade Addison Russell and a prospect and get Chris Archer out of Tampa, what would you do? Who has four years of control
and no money.
Well,
I'd do the Archer deal for sure. I would do the Archer deal because I do not.
So you're giving up your starting shortstop as opposed to just spending money.
I mean, look, but I don't believe that Addison Russell has met the expectations that were set for him. They were set very high, but he's not Barry Larkin yet. And that's the comparison people were throwing out there. And I think that's one of the reasons people are hesitant to trade him. You got to make big trades to get a player like Chris Archer.
I'm not ready to give up an Addison Russell just yet. I want to see through what he can become. But if you're able to get the right price for Chris Archer, and then maybe to somebody like Almora or Happy have to give up or Baez, I'd be willing to do that. I'm not ready to get rid of Russell just yet, but Chris Archer would be a phenomenal fit for the Cubs.
I think that deal makes sense with Russell for Archer. You're giving up less than just a flat $80 million to see if he's a good fit at a third or fourth guy in a rotation. So I would do that instead of the cash, I think.
You put a rotation together of Lester, Quintana, Hendricks, Chatwood, and Chris Archer. That's as good a rotation as there is in the game.
It's got to be the best in the NL.
No doubt about it. And that's five-man deep, really good.
And I think one of the things that baseball has learned, and look, I'm not sitting here criticizing the rebuild, but I think that maybe in retrospect, Theo and Jed might have said, hey, maybe we should have addressed the pitching earlier. Look, they won a World Series. I'm not sitting here criticizing that, but you look at the way the White Sox, for example, are rebuilding. They're loading up on pitching. And you realize that the Red Sox needed to make a big deal for Chris Sale. You know, they went out and traded the best prospect in baseball, so pitching's valuable.
Yeah, looking at adding pitching, Theo and Jed made a decision. We're getting position players first. It's harder to find, and they're much more
I'm not
of
sitting
a
here
risk
criticizing that.
Drafting pitching as opposed to buying existing
and
pitching.
They also knew that they could move them for pitching when they had to. I don't know that they sat there saying that this entire core, and I'm talking about the extended core beyond Bryant and Rizzo, are going to be here for 10 years. I don't think they thought that.
All right, let's go to Milwaukee. We'll have basketball tonight here on NBC Sports Chicago as the Bulls are in Cheese Country, and they'll battle Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks, and that's where we find our Vincent Goodwill, always an entertaining follow on TV and on Twitter. Hi, Vincent. Your take on this Bulls team that's won four consecutive ball games. They need to slow the roll here a little bit, buddy.
The function of the schedule, basically. Look, I think that what to make of it is they beat a Utah team that I think is really good, but basically didn't play the way that they needed to play down the stretch of a game. They beat a Knicks team that doesn't win well on the road, and they beat a Boston Celtics team that was without their best player. Now, you can also attribute that to the Bulls actually playing better point guard play, Nikola Mirotic being back, and them looking like a team that has a certain level of discipline and organization. But, you know, throughout the course of a season, you're going to have ebbs and flows where you can win a few games. You can't deny this team looks like a more confident bunch.
They absolutely do, and you mentioned Chris Dunn. Point guard play has been so much better. Lauri Markkanen also got off to a great start. He's been dealing with back spasms. What is his status for tonight?
Lauri Markkanen will be out tonight. He did not even make the trip to Milwaukee. So it's one of those things for me that I think you have to be very careful with. The Bulls have been careful with Zach LaVine. They're going to be careful with Lauri Markkanen because of the workload that he's had to endure basically since leaving Arizona, playing for the Finnish team in the summer league, and the fact that he's 21, and I think his body is still growing, which is probably why he's having back problems. This is a young kid. Players, when they get in the league so young, a lot of times, Cap, they're still growing into their bodies. So if you don't want to overload them, they were very careful in the beginning about not wanting to play them more than 32 minutes a game. And I think you can see why now with some of the back treatments that he's having and the fact that they've actually decided to hold him back and not even make him a game-time decision tonight.
VG, let me ask you about Nikola Mirotic. He's played very well, and I've attributed to he's like a guy at a crap table in Vegas who got on a heater and a dice are just rolling. Do you keep him as a starter even when Markkanen says he feels well enough to play?
No, he's not. Because this is not an ordinary situation, you would have to agree with that, Cap. As well as he's playing, he's not a part of your future. This season is about your future, going forward, laying a foundation. You can't be worried about who's playing better on a matter of merits and everything, because everybody knows what this is. And come January 15th, Nikola Mirotic might not even be here anyway. So don't make a short-term decision that doesn't have any real long-term benefits. I could see if Nico was going to be a guy that was going to be around for the future and everything else, but we know that he's not going to be around, independent of everything that's happened with Bobby Portis. Add to the fact that you need to see everything you need to see with Lauri Markkanen, when he's healthy, what he can handle. He hasn't done anything to warrant losing his starting spot, even if Nico was playing well. So when you factor all that stuff into me, it's not even a question.
Last one for you. If you look at this Bulls team now after Jimmy Butler has gone to Minnesota and you evaluate the trade that went down on draft night, many people in Chicago very upset that night about that deal. Now, I know it's only December the, 15th? Do you look at that trade today and say that is a huge win for the Bulls?
I wouldn't say huge win. Like, let's ease up off the hyperbole. I know everybody wants to get high off the hog right now because it's December 15th. But I will say that Chris Dunn swings things for me because he had such a bad year under your guy, Tom Thibodeau, who beat him down, and he didn't even look like an NBA point guard for most of last year. So if he's able to be an NBA starter, if he's able to be more than serviceable at the league's deepest position, to me, Zach LaVine is going to be a good player. Larry Markkanen is a good player. You factor in the 16th pick that the Bulls would have had. They could have gotten somebody productive there. So it's not just Jimmy Butler for me. It's not just Jimmy Butler. But when you look at everything on his face right now, all things included, all things that you know and with the benefit of hindsight, yeah, they made it. It seems like a decent deal at this point. But keep in mind, the Timberwolves are fourth now in the Western Conference in year 6-20.
6-20 as you're building, and just remember, I told you this, Chris Dunn will be a really good player, and that basis that he got, that tough coaching he got a year ago, will be a factor in his development.
Don't do that. Cap, don't do that. Don't turn this into basically whatever happens with him, you can just praise Tibbs. Because basically you're putting yourself in a win-win situation. If he turned out not to be a player, then he couldn't handle the coaching. If he did, then it's because of the coaching. Squash that nonsense, Cap, okay? Please.
Just remember who's fourth seeded, my Timberwolves.
Hey. If they thought he was that good, they would have kept him.
You got to give something to get something, buddy.
Whatever, Cap.
Hey.
Whatever, Cap.
Go try real chili before you leave town. It's a good spot up there.
I'll take your word for it. Me and chili don't go well.
Have a good weekend. I'll see you.
You too, Cap.
All right, there's our guy, Vincent Goodwill. All right, Mitchell Trubisky finally got back in the win column last Sunday in the Natty. He looks to make it two in a row tomorrow in the Motor City. How important is it for him to keep winning as his rookie season winds down? We'll get the guys' thoughts.
Hi, guys. I'm Tara Lipinski.
And I'm Johnny Weir.
Guess what, Johnny?
What?
The Winter Olympics are right around the corner. And what does that mean?
Yay. That means we get to see Shaun White, Michaela Schifrin, and other top Team USA athletes conquer fresh snow and ice this February on NBC.
So make sure you're ready. Sign up for NBC Sports and Olympics emails by texting POD to 66866, or you can visit nbcolympics.com/newsletters to receive the latest athlete updates, giveaways, and more.
Message and data rates may apply. Winter is here.
All right, season winding down. Mitchell Trubisky will duck under center in the Motor City on Saturday. Chris, you're going to be heading up there. What do you want to see from Mitchell Trubisky? I don't care win-loss-wise. I just want to see him continue to air the ball out a little bit like he did a week ago.
You want to see more of what you saw on Sunday, which is moving the pocket around, playing to Trubisky's strength, getting that mobility out. Really getting a mismatch on that defense, and then working that complement with Howard and Cohen. They did a great job of that Sunday in Cincinnati. And as a result, you saw Adam Shaheen creating mismatches. The receivers were getting open, which is a rarity. I don't care if they call themselves 7-11 or not. It was a really functional offense. It was the best look the Bears offense has had really since John Fox came in. So you want to see more of that tomorrow in Ford Field.
You know, I sit conflicted on this. I think in an ideal world, you'd have Mitch Trubisky throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns.
And lose.
The Bears still lose. I think that's almost oxymoronic, though, because what you really want to see out of Mitch Trubisky is for him to make the winning plays. You want to see this guy making plays in the fourth quarter because that's going to speak to development.
So if I told you that the Bears could win the game 3-0, the offense did nothing,
well, you know
but they
where
won.
I stand.
I would rather lose 41-38 and Trubisky throws 5 touchdowns.
I am with you. I'm just being practical. I don't know that those go together. I think if Mitch Trubisky plays really well and makes the kind of plays that we want to see him play, we don't want to see him play great through three quarters and terrible in the fourth and lose it. So I think when he's making winning plays, they're winning.
Well, yeah, his leash came off finally in the last game, threw for 271 yards, a rushing touchdown, a passing touchdown. But going into this game, you know the Lions defense is bad against the run. Like you said, Chris, Howard and Cohen are a good 1-2 punch. So do they play to win the game is the question. Are they playing to win the game, or are they trying to get Mitch some reps? I think the reps are more important. I don't know how much it matters to try to win when you're 4-9, you're at the end of the season. So
yeah, I'd rather see them finish 4-12.
But
I agree.
This team can't be looking to tank. I know the tank is a popular word, especially in Chicago, where you saw, you know, the Cubs work this plan, an audacious blueprint, actually, to a championship. This team needs wins right now. I mean, they need to know what it's like to win and establish that culture. But you go into 2018 with the better players. Obviously, you want to try to hit a free agency, get some more draft picks going. But this group right now, a young group, needs to feel what victories are like. And finishing 4-12 doesn't do them any good. They want to get as close to 7-9 as they possibly can. A win at Ford Field against a team in the Lions that is trying to contend right now and stay alive,
that would go a long way. Finishing 4-12 doesn't do them any good.
Because then you got a losing culture set up. They're trying to change.
Oh, please. They're getting a new head coach.
I'm not into
the culture. Will be fine. Get me the highest draft pick I can get.
No, get me Calvin Ridley. That's what they need.
Well, they might be able to get him even if they fall closer to the 10th pick. But Mitchell Trubisky needs to win some games. I mean, he needs to get himself established as a winning quarterback and learn what it's like to win those games.
Well, he needs the rest of the team, I think, to help him win the games. I think he needs more reps. I mean, what if he only throws 20 times, only has 20 attempts, and then they run the ball more and manage to win? I don't think that does much for your franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and I believe it's more complicated than that. I don't believe the 3-0 win does a lot for the Bears. I mean, the 35
they win
13-7
or lose 41-38, I'll take the loss.
Well, they're not going to have any more of those games where Trubisky goes 4-7 like they did in the win over Carolina. He's in a different place now with this offense where they can open it up, and Trubisky's going to win. You're going to be winning or losing with Trubisky here from here on out these next three games. So if they win, it's going to be because of Trubisky. If they lose, and it's because Trubisky made a mistake, and you learn from that. He wants to be winning some games right now, and this team needs to win some games here.
All right, we'll see. Blackhawks won three games in a row at home against teams toward the bottom of the standings. Not that impressive. But then they went on the road and crushed a Jets team that had dropped three of its previous four. So are the Blackhawks back? We're just feasting on weak competition. We'll talk about it.
When the game ends, switch back to CSN Chicago for Bears postgame live. The team will take you through all the key moments from the field, hear from Coach Fox, and get live player reactions. Bears postgame live after every Bears game on CSN Chicago.
Blackhawks win their fourth straight. They bludgeon Winnipeg on the road. Passing was crisp. Scotty, you cover this team. They looked phenomenal last night.
Yeah, they looked great. Look, they went into a hard building and a hard team to play against. I think the Jets are 10-0-1, their last 11 at home, fourth best power play in the league, and they smoked them 5-1. You have Crawford's been amazing all year. Hellebuyck's been a real hot goalie for the Jets. The Jets have a good four-line rotation. So it was a huge win, and it came after, you know, the first three games in a winning streak where teams they should have beat, but I think a lot of good things still happened in that winning streak. They were more important, actually, than the wins. I think you have close to a four-line rotation. Now you look at last night, five goals almost from every line. I think just the first line didn't get on the board. You had the defense get on the board, but there's a lot to be happy about right now.
We talked about it before, the Blackhawks back. When this team can roll four lines the way it did last night, I mean, you're relying on Corey Crawford playing like he did last night, then yes, the Blackhawks are back. That's the Blackhawks at their best. I have a lot of concerns about what they still have defensively, how Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook are going to handle a long season. That's where they're going to have to add pieces, but I like the way they look right now.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.